This is Company Cars, the podcast that tries to make sense of the car business. Hello, and welcome to an emergency episode of Company Cars. I've never done this game time episode type situation about an event that's just happened, but on Friday, January 13th, Tesla dropped some big news on the automotive business by saying that they were going to cut prices across the board on its lineup anywhere between 6 and 20%, with the 20% price cut coming on Tesla's most popular model, the Model Y long-range all-wheel drive. So in this episode, I want to talk a little bit about what happened, what was Tesla's motivation for doing this, what the implications and consequences are for the electric vehicle market in general and for some important stakeholders in this decision, and also what this means for shoppers and for competitors, and what this decision tells me about Tesla's strategy for 2023 and 2024. This is also a great opportunity to work through some of my backlog on rental car roulette, and so we'll talk about a Ford Mustang convertible at the end, which was a really fun car to have when I was visiting sunny Southern California. So what exactly happened? And on Friday, January 13th, Tesla announced some breathtaking price reductions and updated their website. So Tesla sells cars directly to end consumers, and so there's no need to notify dealers of the changes. There's no need to publish new incentives. Tesla can just change the number that's presented on the website and the number that its retail stores show consumers when they come in to look for a car. So on Friday, January 13th, they updated their website, and these new prices reflected prices that were between 6 and 20% lower than the same prices that were shown on January 12th for the same cars. So the biggest price cut came on Tesla's most popular vehicle. There was an almost 20% price reduction on the Tesla Model Y long range. So the base price for this car dropped from $65,990 to $52,990 as of January 2023. So other cars also received pretty breathtaking reductions in price of between $3,000 or more dollars. And this is especially notable because in December, Tesla advertised this limited time sale where they discounted $7,500 off most vehicles that were available for immediate delivery. But the price cuts now are much broader, and instead of applying just to vehicles in inventory that you can take home today, the price reductions apply even to custom configured cars on the website. And so this is a huge about turn for Tesla, who has been steadily raising prices over the past 18 months and leading people to want to just go ahead and order a Tesla because prices were probably trending up. And so a big question is, why would Tesla make this decision now and make this decision right after they cleaned out basically most of their available for sale inventory in December with the big $7,500 sale? And this is a big question and requires a lot of unpacking. So they have a lot of reasons for why they might want to do a price reset like this. And so at a surface level, a lot of people said that their price reductions were a reaction to the Inflation Reduction Act tax credits for electric vehicles. So the new Inflation Reduction Act tax credit for electric vehicles removed the previous volume-based cap on automakers, where only the first 200,000 EVs an automaker sold would be eligible, and instead replaces it with a blanket cap of anywhere between $3,750 and $7,500, depending on where the vehicle is produced and where the minerals in the battery come from. And so part of this new EV tax credit is a price cap because the Treasury Department doesn't want to be subsidizing people who are buying extremely high-end luxury electric vehicles. So the Inflation Reduction Act set a price cap of $55,000 for cars and $80,000 for SUVs. And the U.S. Treasury's rules for classifying what is a car and what is an SUV meant that the Tesla Model Y long range was classified as a car instead of an SUV, unless you ordered the optional third row seat. And so this may sound counterintuitive because it clearly feels like an SUV in terms of its usability, but actually the U.S. Treasury is following pretty established guidelines from the EPA about what is a car and what is a light truck. And so we've had some discussions on the podcast about this. And it turns out the height and dimensions and shape of the Tesla Model Y long range meant that it could be a car if it carried 5 passengers, and it could be a truck if it carried more than 5 passengers. So, under the old pricing scheme where the Model Y started at $65,990, this would now be over the price cap on a car, which is now $55,000. So a lot of people are saying, well, it's the Inflation Reduction Act that's driving Tesla to reduce their prices because they're trying to bring their vehicles in line so that their customers can be eligible for the tax credit. So that's probably some of the reason why Tesla is doing this, because the clarification over what would be classified as a car and what would be classified as an SUV didn't exactly come out until very recently. And so there was a lot of ambiguity over how these things would be classified. So Tesla also noted that their costs of production are coming down because they're ramping up scale. They're achieving economies of scale by having some of their new factories come online. And so they're saying that they're passing these savings from their production efficiencies along to the end consumer. And so you might refer to a tweet by Elon Musk last year that said, kind of, as they increase their scale, they'll be able to lower prices. But I think this is just a surface level explanation here, because I don't think the tax credit rules or production efficiencies can explain all the price changes. First off, Tesla adjusted pricing on models that were already eligible for the tax credit. So for example, certain configurations of the Tesla Model 3 and models that even after the price change would not be eligible for the tax credit. So Tesla took this opportunity to reduce the price of the Model S and the Model X as well. And production efficiencies don't totally explain this either, because they wouldn't explain why now. So yes, there may be some easing in supply chain constraints for battery materials and stuff, but it's not 20%, right? So I think that this only explains part of the story. And I think another explanation here is the market for high-end or expensive vehicles has started to deteriorate quite a bit, because car loans are much more expensive than they were 12 months ago. And as Tesla brings on additional capacity for production, they're finally catching up with demand for their cars. So they're kind of facing this perfect storm where they're finally able to produce a high enough volume of cars to meet demand and have excess inventory and excess capacity, just as their cars are getting more expensive because it's getting more expensive for their shoppers to borrow money to buy the car. And so one additional explanation here is Tesla is trying to boost demand and sales by adjusting pricing to increase the pool of customers who would consider a Tesla and who can afford a Tesla. So another important thing to keep in mind is, even with today's price cuts, today's price for a Tesla Model Y long range is still higher than when the car originally launched in 2020, because Tesla has raised prices rapidly over the course of 2021 and 2022. So you can think of these price cuts, even though they look like they're a huge percentage, in a sense, they are reversing a lot of the pandemic-induced price hikes and pandemic-era excess demand for products. So a lot of the price cuts can be framed that way as well, in the sense of Tesla returning to their original price points for these cars, but it still has huge follow-on consequences, which we'll talk about in a minute. And I talked about Tesla facing this perfect storm of rising interest rates making it more expensive to borrow, just as their production facilities are ramping up and they're able to produce lots and lots and lots of Model 3s and Model Ys at scale. But there's another element of this perfect storm as well, and that is the competitive environment for electric cars is changing quickly. So since the original Model S came out in 2012, Tesla has pretty much had a large chunk of the market to itself, because not a lot of competitors were out on the market, and the ones that were largely niche products or products meant more as proof of concept that they could build an electric car more than a true mainstream EV product. But that's starting to change. 2023 and 2024 is the start of a huge wave of electric vehicles coming from traditional OEMs in the US market. So I'm thinking of cars like the Cadillac Lyriq, the Chevy Blazer, the Mercedes-Benz EQ family. So Mercedes-Benz launched 3 electric vehicles in 2022, the Audi Q4 e-tron, and others. These are all products that are ramping up this year or coming to the market this year. So there's a huge onslaught of competitors coming to the market just as Tesla's core products, the Model 3 and Model Y, are starting to get a little bit old. So the Model 3 has been around since 2017, so that's 6 years without a major redesign, which is a pretty long time in the car business. And the Model Y has been out since 2020, and so that's roughly 3 years on the market now. And so both of these products that are core to Tesla's profitability and volume are aging and maybe starting to lose a little bit of ground to newer competitors, even though these two cars are quite good, right, in terms of range and performance. They're still very competitive, but they've been around for a long time, so people are starting to catch up. And so the idea here is maybe Tesla sees these competitors coming, right? So these automakers launch their plans, reveal their plans, and Tesla has been able to achieve pretty strong gross margins on the car. So they make on average 25 to 27% gross margins, which is best in the industry, actually. So on average, you might think gross margins at an automaker are maybe half that or less, for example. And so on the back of the envelope, it looks like they can still be profitable even with this 20% price cut. So they're just taking it out of their margins, right? And so the idea here is competing automakers are maybe still in the early stages of their cost efficiency and cost minimization strategies of their electric vehicles. But because Tesla's been around for a long time, they've had a lot of opportunities to already take a lot of the cost out of producing an electric car, and they can use that advantaged cost structure to their advantage. So they have a huge leg up here, and basically by cutting prices here, they can price cars well below what it would cost a competitor to produce a similar car. And basically they can either force some competitors to eat losses on their cars and think about making it up later, or they can even convince some competitors at the margin who are maybe startups or just getting started to exit the business entirely. And so it's going to be pretty interesting. So in some senses, Tesla is kicking off a price war in the EV business, just as other automakers are kind of in the very early stages and haven't really had a great opportunity to focus on taking cost out to be able to offer a lower price. So offering a lower priced EV is a big priority for a lot of automakers, but because their electric vehicle efforts are still relatively new, though catching up quickly, they're still at a cost disadvantage relative to Tesla and Tesla's scale for building electric cars. And so Tesla is essentially trying to defend its market share, because up until now, they've had close to 60, 70, 80% market share in certain segments of electric vehicles. And that's probably going to change, right, as more cars come online and people maybe choose different things. So they're trying to defend their market share as best as they can. And one easy way to do that is to offer consumers a deal. Another reason why Tesla needs to drive some traffic to its stores and sell some cars is that the company has communicated to investors that they have substantial growth targets for 2023. And even despite putting out a nice sale at the end of the year in 2022, they just barely missed their expectations for new vehicle sales in 2022. So Elon Musk has gone on the record on Twitter saying that he's willing to sacrifice margins for growth. And so we're seeing the decisions related to that strategy. So Tesla in 2022, even to meet their lower target that they actually wound up selling, to even get that far as they got, they sold a lot of cars to Hertz and other rental car agencies. So that's a lever that's going to be harder for them to pull in 2023. If Hertz took a ton of cars in the first half of 2022 or throughout the year, then, well, those cars are practically brand new. Unless Tesla offers Hertz a huge discount to refresh their fleet so quickly. So they need to find some new levers. And so 2023 was already going to be a really challenging year because we have all of the market-wide factors that we just talked about, plus a Tesla-stated goal that they want to increase their volume in 2023 despite the tougher market conditions. So a price cut on models that they're going to sell to end consumers should help Tesla achieve its goals quite a bit for 2023. And so there's only so many new car buyers who are willing to spend $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 on a new car. But as we move closer to the median new vehicle price of $50,000 or just under $50,000, your addressable market, if your Tesla, gets quite a bit larger than it was 3 months ago. And so we're already seeing some anecdotal evidence of that being the case. If you look at the message boards, if you look on Reddit, and if you look at Tesla's inventory of cars available immediately, it has started to shrink quite a bit in the past 24 hours. And so they're trying to capture this bigger addressable market of consumers who are willing to spend maybe 45 to 60 grand on a car and willing to entertain a Tesla, because that group of buyers is much larger than the group of people who are willing to spend 60 to 80 grand on a car, for example. So these price cuts, while they help Tesla address this broader market, they don't come free, right? So in addition to the financial consequences of offering a lower price and accepting lower margins, there are lots of other follow-up consequences, and not just for Tesla. So Tesla may come out okay, right? Because if you make half of your old profit margins, but you sell twice as many vehicles, your total profit in number of dollars stays the same, right? And so assuming that that math works out for Tesla, it's actually probably okay. And I'm sure as they fill up their factories with production, their average cost per unit can come down, because manufacturing cars is a very fixed cost heavy business. So you need to be able to amortize the cost of building a car across many cars, right? So you have that factory, you have the workers, you have the machinery, all that's all fixed up front. And so if you can produce as many cars as possible, you can actually bring that cost down. So there is a state of the world where Tesla, by reducing its prices, can make more money. And so I think Tesla themselves, they'll probably come out okay. And we'll talk about what this tells me about Tesla's business prospects going forward. But this price cut has consequences, especially for owners of existing Teslas, especially those who purchased their Teslas in the second half of 2022, or just assumed that Teslas would retain their value really well, because historically, Teslas have had incredible resale value. So with a massive price cut, what's happening is the price of a brand new Tesla is now competing with used Teslas. So the used car buyer who's shopping will say, well, why would I buy a used Tesla when I can buy a new one and save $3,000? And so we're already starting to see the immediate consequences of Tesla's big price cut affecting used Teslas on the market, especially if you go to CarMax and you look at their pricing of Tesla Model 3s and Model Ys from Wednesday to Friday. In many locations, CarMax has gone ahead and started adjusting to account for the flat fact that there are not that many people who will buy a used Tesla for more money than a new Tesla. So over the past 2 years, there was a unique situation where a used Tesla maybe had appreciated in value, and that was because Teslas had such a long wait time for them that some people were willing to pay a premium to get a car right now. But those long wait times are gone. So if I wanted to buy a Tesla Model Y today, I could walk into a Tesla store and click on a few things and walk out with a Tesla if I wanted to. And so depending on where you live, some states can't sell cars on weekends. But in general, you kind of understand what I mean, is that there's no wait time anymore. And so there's no premium left for a Tesla that's available right now versus waiting in the long production queue. So this massive price cut has delivered a one-time large decline in value for existing Teslas out there in the marketplace, which has really big consequences for owners who bought their Teslas recently and borrowed money to buy the car, especially those who put very little down payment on the car. So if you bought a Tesla in October and you put no money down, you are probably upside down on your car loan, which means you owe more on your car than what it's worth, which is not a good place to be. In the car business, this happens all the time because cars are depreciating assets, but it's not great because it means if these owners go to sell their cars today, they would have to bring cash to the table for someone to take their car away from them, because they would have to pay off their old loan, And then the money that they get from selling their Tesla to somebody else won't be enough to cover that remaining loan balance. So effectively, if you're upside down in your Tesla, you are locked into your Tesla until you're no longer upside down or you've paid off your loan, basically. And so that's not a great place, especially if you're somebody who bought a Tesla last year, assuming that the resale value would be pretty stable, maybe even go up just a little bit because Tesla values had been going up in 2021 and 2022, just like many other used cars. And so now that assumption is shattered, right? And so we have a total reset of what the market looks like for Teslas. And so there will be some collateral damage in the form of existing Tesla owners. And this might not be a good thing for Tesla because these owners may be unhappy with Tesla's sudden change. And these are customers who may decide that they don't want to buy another Tesla. But I think the jury is still out whether the group of people that bought Teslas last year would be upset enough to never buy a Tesla again, and whether this pool of people is large enough to make a difference in Tesla's business, especially given that Tesla can now sell cars to many more shoppers. And if you think the individual consumer who bought a Tesla in the fourth quarter is probably feeling a little tough, think about Hertz. And so Hertz took a huge bet on Teslas, and they ordered 100,000 Teslas in 2021 for delivery through 2021, 2022, and 2023 as part of their fleet renewal strategy and to be a more sustainable company and to encourage people to try electric cars. And so on Twitter, you'll see lots of people taking pictures of Hertz locations where these Teslas have started piling up. And in Hertz's business model, and so there's a previous podcast episode where I talk about this, my understanding is their justification for buying Teslas is that they made some assumptions about the resale values for Teslas. Remember, Teslas historically had held their value really, really, really well. And Hertz had made some assumptions about their ability to rent Teslas out for a premium because people would want to try something cool. Hertz also figured they would save quite a bit of money on maintenance because electric cars are less expensive to maintain, for example. So at the time they made the decision, the business case was clear. You have cars that don't really lose their value that much in the first 2 or 3 years of their life. You have cars that consumers would pay a premium to rent and that can help you get into the press as like being the leading place to rent a Tesla. And these cars are cheaper to maintain and operate as a fleet operator. But these economics are dramatically shifting. So the assumptions about stable resale values on Teslas, that just got wiped out with this price cut, right? So if you imagine that Hertz probably did get some discount in the end, but when the deal first came out, Elon Musk said that they did not get a discount. And so we don't know exactly the terms of Tesla's deal with Hertz, but let's say they got some sort of small discount. It probably wasn't so massive as to be 20 to 25%. So when Hertz negotiates purchases with a traditional automaker, it is possible to get that big of a discount, but with the supply chain constraints of 2021 and 2022, a lot of automakers weren't offering really big fleet discounts, maybe a little bit here and there, but they weren't offering a ton of huge discounts. And I would imagine Tesla didn't have to offer Hertz any major discounts as well. So they've paid the old prices for a large chunk of these cars. And what we're seeing is because so many are entering the Hertz fleet at the same time, that the premium that they were able to command for the car, we're seeing that premium come down because there's just so many Tesla Model 3s and Model Ys in the fleet at Hertz. And so every time I go to Hertz, it's always available as an option. I just haven't gotten around to trying one yet, but it's always available. And so it's always bookable. And if you're looking at just the standard rate, let's say for today or Monday, I think some people on Twitter are saying that they're observing that it's actually cheaper to run a Tesla than to rent a traditional car right now. So now we have the second pillar of Hertz's strategy with Tesla basically gone. And so really what's left is this lower maintenance and operating costs. And so it'll be interesting to see how Hertz manages their Tesla portfolio and what their plan is, whether they plan to keep these cars longer, whether they plan to diversify their EV portfolio. So they've started buying some Polestars from what I can observe. And so it'll be interesting to see what Hertz does given this development in the economics of operating a huge fleet of Teslas. And now it's time for a short break. we'll hear from our sponsors, and we'll share some information about how to submit a listener question. The Company Cars podcast is sponsored by Rejected Conjectures Incorporated, a division of Integrated Derivatives. If you have a question that you want answered on the show, write us an email at companycarspodcast@gmail.com. And what does this mean for other EV manufacturers? I think Tesla put other EV manufacturers in a bad spot. I think intentionally so. And especially manufacturers who had anchored some of their pricing relative to Tesla. So for example, Polestar priced its Polestar 2 car, which is about a Tesla Model 3 in size, to be just a hair under the Model 3, and at the time when Polestar launched that car, the Polestar 2 was eligible for a federal tax credit, and so that made the car a little more attractive price-wise than the Model 3. But the Polestar 2 is not eligible for the new Inflation Reduction Act tax credit because it's not assembled in North America, and so with Tesla's recent price cuts, the Polestar 2 now sells at a pretty steep premium to the Tesla Model 3. So it'll be interesting to see how Polestar responds. They've also started having some demand issues where you can get a Polestar 2 pretty quickly. And so it'll be interesting to see how they respond because they have more levers they can pull. They are operating a much more traditional dealership system. And so for a while now, they've actually been quietly offering discounted leases without much fanfare. And I think we'll see some more activity there in terms of offering low-cost leases from Polestar. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do, especially since Polestar is so closely aligned with Volvo's electric vehicles. And so whatever Volvo does with its Volvo electric cars, they'll probably do something similar with their strategy for Polestar. And there's a lot of other automakers who may want to take a second look at their pricing. So some of these automakers had cited rapidly rising supply chain costs in the last year or two to raise prices. And I'm specifically thinking of Ford with their F-150 Lightning and Mustang Mach-E. And in particular, the Mustang Mach-E, because it's such a close competitor of the Tesla Model Y. And so I think Hyundai with their Ioniq 5 and Kia EV6, GM with the Chevy Blazer, and maybe even the Cadillac Lyriq, and Volvo with their products, I think, are especially exposed to the big price cut, especially on the Tesla Model Y. So it'll be interesting to see what the automakers do in response, if anything, if they can afford to do anything. So I know these automakers have much tighter profit margins than Tesla does on the same cars because they're at a much earlier stage of their cost efficiency. So I think the biggest winner here in this whole Tesla price cut scenario is EV shoppers are the biggest beneficiary of this, especially if you were seriously considering a Tesla product. And in particular, the Model Y, I mean, you just saved 20% overnight just by waiting to buy your car. And so the Tesla Model Y, I mean, it's got good range performance, it's got good acceleration performance, it's got a reasonably roomy interior. It's not a bad car. I think at $65,990, it was definitely very overpriced. But I think $52,990 at the new pricing, it's somewhat reasonable. And I think the best value if you're thinking about getting a Model Y is to get as few options as possible. So do not get enhanced autopilot if you can avoid it. Do not get full self-driving, because those are the things that are driving a lot of Tesla's profit margins. And so especially enhanced autopilot and full self-driving, there's a lot of concerns about how usable these technologies are. And so I won't have a whole discussion about those here, but just keep in mind that the benefits may not outweigh the costs on those two products. And so I would skip those. I would skip the optional wheels. I would skip everything. I would just get the absolute bare bones base car, the $52,990 car. Tesla makes you pay extra if you want a color other than white. And so if you can live with white, I would get white. But, you know, I think if you want blue or silver, you have to pay $1,000. And if you want black, it's $1,500. And if you want red, it's $2,000. And so even if you paid $2,000 for red, that puts you at $54,990 before destination charges and taxes. And that's a pretty compelling car for an electric car that you can credibly use as a replacement for a gasoline car. You'll have access to the supercharger network. You'll have a car that can go 300-ish miles before charging. And so EV shoppers are the biggest winner here, especially if you're somebody who would consider a Tesla. And so regardless of whether other automakers wind up matching Tesla's price cuts or not, if you were seriously considering a Model Y and a Tesla in general, you're probably the biggest beneficiary. And doubly beneficiary, the people who doubly benefit, to put a different way, are the people who can take advantage of the new federal tax credit as well. There are some income restrictions on the new federal tax credit, so make sure you qualify under those rules. Keep in mind that they'll look at your 2022 and your 2023 taxable income, so you just need one of the 2 years where your modified adjusted gross income falls under the threshold, which is $150,000 for single filers and $300,000 for married filing jointly filers. And so if you're eligible for the new tax credit, I think it's a really good deal and it's a really compelling purchase to get a Tesla Model Y at the current $52,990 pricing and then get $7,500 back on your taxes, up to $7,500 back on your taxes, I should say, when you go to do your tax return. So of course you'd want to talk to a true tax accountant when you're evaluating that decision, but I think it's a very compelling offer now, and much more so in a way than it was last fall when there was no tax credit. It was $65,990 and there was a lot of competition coming. And so I think that Tesla is going to continue to face demand headwinds in 2023 because of all the things we've discussed previously. And Tesla has put themselves on this hamster wheel. So they have this huge goal for 2023. They're cutting prices up front to try and stimulate interest. But you know, if they come up just a little bit short at the end of every quarter, I would be shocked if they're not tempted to offer a limited time discount at the end of each quarter, just like they did in December. So if you've ever listened to the This American Life episode about having to sell 129 cars, and it gets really tense when it gets down to the last 3 days of the month, which is why some people say those are the best days to go buy a car. Tesla is especially exposed to this issue because we all know over the past few years that they would rush to try to get as many cars delivered as possible in the last 2 weeks of the quarter because they were trying to meet some arbitrary target for volume growth. So, you know, if we get to the end of March or mid-March and they're a little bit short, I could see them rolling out some additional incentives. I feel like that they left some room for themselves to discount just a little bit further if they need to at the end to give that bump at the end of each quarter. And so if you're thinking about buying a Model Y, I might let the dust settle on the current discounts for a little bit. And kind of as we get into February, get a feel for what Tesla's doing and how the price cuts are going for them and see if they're working or not, and see if there's a weight starting to build back up again for Tesla products. And so it should be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens to Tesla. And I think, what does this tell me about Tesla? It tells me that, well, maybe Tesla is just another car company. There was a really good Wall Street Journal piece that came out yesterday, Friday, January 13th, about whether Tesla is just another car company, because they're starting to do a lot of things that the traditional automakers would do, tinkering with pricing, tinkering with incentives, tinkering with your product offer. And so I think that Tesla thinks they're going to have a hard time hitting their growth targets this year. So maybe Tesla knows something that we don't, and I'd wager to say they probably do know a lot that we don't, but they don't have a ton going on in terms of new product releases this year. Cybertruck is supposed to come out this year, but who knows if it'll be delayed. It always seems to be 6 months away, right? And so Tesla has a huge chunk of manufacturing capacity that is ramping up to 100% this year, so they're going to have a lot of production capability that they need to fill up with cars. So their focus is going to be on driving volume. And so I don't know if we've seen the end of the price cuts, especially if interest rates stay high or demand continues to soften as we get closer and closer to a potential recession. Tesla's goals were made kind of without thinking about, well, what happens if we're affected by a recession? And so it'll be interesting to see how far they're willing to go to keep their goal and achieve their goal despite this really, really difficult market environment. So I think it's going to be a bumpy year for Tesla. And so it'll be a bumpy year if you're a Tesla investor. I am not a Tesla investor, for full disclosure. I am an investor in Ford and GM. I have small stock positions in those, so to disclose that. But it's going to be an interesting and probably bumpy year for Tesla. And so I think the consumer is the big winner here. So regardless of what happens with what competitors do about pricing, consumers win, which is great news if you're a car shopper. Maybe not so great news if you bought one last year, but it'll be interesting to see if this strategy works or if they have to keep discounting to hit their volume targets. And now it's time for Rental Car Roulette. All right, on this episode of Rental Car Roulette, we're going to talk about a fun car. This is a modern take on an American classic. So I had to go to San Diego last summer for work, and when I got to Hertz, there were a bunch of Ford Mustang convertibles that I could choose from. And, you know, I'm in San Diego, it's beautiful outside, and I was going to do a little driving up to Los Angeles, and so let's do it. So I took the Ford Mustang with the lowest mileage, but it had the most beat-up rear bumper. And it had about 17,000 miles on the odometer, and it was a standard rental car grade Mustang. So it was a 2.3 liter EcoBoost four-cylinder, so a little engine, and it was a premium trim, so that meant it had leather seats that were heated and air-conditioned, which was perfect, and it had the 10-speed automatic transmission instead of the manual. So on paper, not especially speedy, but it was a really fun car to drive. I think the 2.3 liter four-cylinder pairs really well with the car. So I took the car, and I drove to Los Angeles and back, and it was perfect for this really nice, sunny, oceanfront drive up Highway 1, and the car was great. I mean, it's really fun. You put the top down, you turn on your music, and you know, when you want to step on the gas a little bit, the car makes a nice sound, and so it was really fast. It was fun sounding. I enjoyed it. The air-conditioned seats were huge with the black leather interior, so if you have the top down and the sun is shining on you, that air-conditioned seat is a game changer. And so it had a great 9-speaker sound system. And, you know, look, sometimes you just want to have fun and smile when you're driving the car. And this was definitely one of those cars. And it was nice because I could put my suitcase in the trunk entirely, which I can't do in the Mustang's biggest competitor, the Chevy Camaro. I think I have to put my suitcase in the back seat, which makes the Camaro a little less practical than the Mustang for my purposes. And this particular Mustang was a little beat up. It had a lot of curb rash. It had had a few, it's got some mismatched tires. So it's been in Hertz's fleet for a while, despite the relatively low odometer. And other people have had a good time with it. You know, when you get a Mustang, you get really excited driving out of the rental car place. And so, you know, you're probably going to step on it a little bit. You're probably going to drive a little more aggressively than you would if you were driving a rented Kia Soul or Toyota Camry, for example. And so this car was a lot of fun. And although I don't think I would buy this specific Mustang just because it's had a very hard life. But the convertible is a dying breed, unfortunately, as much as I love convertibles. And Ford is one of the last automakers standing with a convertible under $50,000. And the Mustang has four seatbelts, which I think under $50,000, it's basically just the Mustang and the Camaro, I think. And so the other ones that come to mind, the BMW 4 Series, Mercedes E-Class and C-Class, and the Audi A5, they're all more expensive than the Mustang and the Camaro. And so I think the Mustang is a better take on the American muscle car, at least in rental car grade, than the Camaro. The Camaro looks great, but the Camaro, it's a little tough to see out of. The trunk is really small as a function of its styling, and the back seat is much tighter. So I think the Mustang does a better job at being practical as a convertible, although admittedly, neither the Mustang nor the Camaro are pretty practical as a rental car, right? You're not going to put a lot of luggage in either of these, even though they're relatively big cars. The doors are big, heavy, and long, and so it's really easy to hit somebody else with the doors, so you got to be really careful about that. And, you know, but sometimes you just want something fun, and so that makes this a really nice car to rent and not to own. And I think that's my verdict on this car. I don't think I would buy a Mustang EcoBoost for myself because it doesn't really fit my lifestyle, but it's definitely something where if I really wanted to have a good time driving up and down the coast or driving through some twisty back roads, I might pay extra to confirm that I could get this car. And so a Mustang EcoBoost convertible would be perfect for a summertime drive up Highway 1 from Los Angeles to San Francisco, for example, and maybe to further points north. So this car is going to be perfect for that. And I think it's better than the Camaro. So if I get to the counter and they offer me a choice between a Mustang and a Camaro convertible, I'm going to choose the Mustang probably 8 or 9 times out of 10. So the Mustang has a bigger trunk, has a bigger back seat, controls that are more intuitive and easier to use, in my opinion, based on the last Camaro I drove and the last Mustang I drove. And the cabin is a little bit quieter when the top is down. I think just as a function of the shape of the car, the Camaro is a little blockier, a little chunkier, and so I think that creates a little more wind noise, in my opinion. So yeah, this rental car was a lot of fun. It was the perfect setting for it. Sometimes you show up to a place and you're just not in the right situation to take advantage of a car like this. So I've showed up with, let's say, my entire family and seen a bunch of really fun Mustang convertibles or even a Mercedes C-Class convertible one time. But I can't do it because those cars don't fit 4 people and their luggage. They'll fit 4 people or some luggage. And so you have to be in the right situation. And I got really lucky and I was in the right situation for that on this trip. And so the car was a lot of fun. And so I hope you enjoyed this episode. That's going to wrap it up for this episode. Hope you enjoyed hearing my thoughts on the recent Tesla price cuts and the Tesla changes. And stay tuned for more discussion about the automotive business in future episodes.